Welcome into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and we know as minicamp is rolling along, you probably have tons of thoughts, questions, comments about what's going on out on the field right now, actually, as we speak. Minicamp is happening. We were out there for about 30 minutes before, and so if you notice, we are sweaty and gross. That is why.
We'll take because, the air conditioning for half an hour.
Yeah, we strategically planned
we might miss
that.
Some really important stuff out there.
Really important of those individual drills. But yeah, we're sure you have tons of thoughts and questions, so send those all our way. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll get to those in our final segment of our show, so you can keep sending them in throughout the show until that point. So minicamp is kind of just a more glorified OTA.
It's exactly OTAs.
Yeah, it's
that's what Coach said. He kind of laughed after Tuesday, and somebody said how it's different than OTAs. He's like, it's exactly like OTAs.
It's just the mandatory.
It's not. That's and he didn't even mention that, which is strange, because that is the one big distinction. It's mandatory. And everybody's here, which you would expect. I mean, we don't really have any contract issues to worry about. So there's about 8 guys who aren't practicing, but that's still 80-plus guys working out there. So they're getting a lot of good work in. But, yeah, from a structural standpoint, it's very similar to OTAs. They can just be in the building a little bit longer during the day, so more classroom time.
More of the meetings and everything, which is obviously really helpful, especially for rookies and guys that are trying to learn the playbook and all that. So for veterans, OTAs and minicamp are probably not quite as important.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many guys take a tear it all down to ground zero and start over again sort of approach. I mean, I was talking to Keith Tandy earlier today. You know, he finished the season so strong. Right. And you might think, OK, you might think he struts into the offseason like I got this figured out. Right. Well, first of all, that's not the kind of guy that Keith Tandy is. But most of these guys really they enjoy the opportunity. Maybe enjoy isn't always the right word on an afternoon like this. But overall, they appreciate the opportunity to sort of have some time to get back and do the basics and the fundamentals. And they're building from there. And of course, in a broader sense, or in a more important sense, that involves installing the playbooks, because you want to hit training camp with your playbooks totally installed. And so they're kind of at the very tail end of that now, and they're working on a lot of situational football.
Yeah, and it is really great for them to get a chance to work out together. And I talked to Clint McDonald a little bit about that yesterday, of just the over the next month when they take their break after the end of minicamp. Of he's like, yeah, I mean, I just go and work out still. And he's like, but obviously it's different when you're by yourself.
Sure.
And he said how nice it is to really build that chemistry, build that bond, and be kind of pushing each other. Even though you're not really getting to play, there is still at least a little bit of that competitiveness.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Which is kind of nice, and I'm sure that it gets them that much more excited for training camp when there's actual hitting that can happen.
Yeah, I think most of the guys try to find a way to work out in the 6 weeks that follow this before training camp, because you don't want to lose. You'll lose what you've gained if you do nothing, and they all know that. I mean, these guys know it better than you and I. They're professionals, and they know what they need to do so that when they hit training camp, they're ready to go, or otherwise they're going to fall behind.
And we talked about for OTAs that how certain positions obviously are much more able to stand out and be more obvious to see what's going on in them than others. The linemen, you can't tell anything because they're just standing around kind of.
Yeah. It was funny, before you move on, that Robert Ayers had a really almost kind of funny interception yesterday, because the pass went about 4 yards and he's just staying there at the end of the line. He's like, I mean, it was for a big lineman, it's kind of impressive, just plucked it out of the air. But as Coach Cutter pointed out afterwards, like, well, it's a great play by Ayers, but if this is a real game, he's not standing there because he's doing everything he can to power through that offensive lineman or around him to get to the quarterback. So he's not standing there, because the linemen basically kind of get up and lean on each other. They really can't. They can't hit each other.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're going to get in trouble.
Exactly. That's kind of funny.
So that's
an interesting play.
That pick wouldn't have even happened, but I think you were heading towards the point that there are some positions.
Yeah, so there are some position groups that you can tell a little bit. So what were some of those areas that you were going in to look at minicamp?
I think last week we talked about what we might want to watch at minicamp, and one of the things was wide receiver DB matchups, especially DeSean Jackson on Vernon Hargraves. And we need to be clear that every time DeSean Jackson runs a route, he's not on Vernon Hargraves, and vice versa. But there are times when they match up. And there was two plays that were probably the two most memorable plays from yesterday's practice. One, DeSean got deep, caught a bomb. And the other one, Hargraves was right there with him and intercepted a pass. So, I mean, it was one for each side. It's always a sort of a zero-sum thing in practice or a training camp, and that yay for the offense, boo for the defense, or vice versa.
So when you can get some of each, that's very helpful to feel like both sides of the ball are progressing a little
bit. I think
we're
more happy about the DeSean touchdown, though, because the offense, on more days than not, the defense has been ahead, which is totally common this time of year. Believe me, we say this time of year all the time.
And why is that for people who are like, wait a minute, why would that be the case, when obviously the offense is what's gotten so much publicity this offseason for all the additions?
Well, think about it. They're both working specific playbooks, right? They both have to learn their playbooks and their jobs. But an offense to succeed has to do things very precisely, and a defense obviously has to do things precisely, but there's a big part of it that's reactionary. You're reacting to what you're seeing, and if the defense is comfortable in what they're doing and reacting, you know, they're going to make some plays, whereas the offense is still trying to hone 11 guys doing everything exactly right on every play.
That's true. That makes a very good point.
It makes sense that the defense would be a little ahead of the offense right now.
So looking at those wide receiver DB matchups, obviously we've seen that it's been fairly even between Deshaun and maybe guys like Brent Grimes mm-hmm. and Vernon Hargraves. What about some of the other guys at each of those roles that maybe more on the bubble?
Right.
Have any of them been able to make some plays to stand out?
Well, according to Coach, Cam Brait and Adam Humphries have been the most consistent players throughout the offseason, which is cool. That's good to hear. And both of those guys are in positions where we added to them. And so you think for a moment, is O.J. Howard going to squeeze out Cam Brait? Is Chris Godwin going to squeeze out Adam Humphries? When in reality, there's plenty of opportunities for this offense to use all those guys, often in tandem. And so it's a good thing that a Brait and a Humphries are standing out when you're already expecting big things out of a guy like O.J. Howard and maybe out of Chris Godwin, who's been also one of the standouts during the offseason since he was drafted.
Yeah, that's true. So looking at some of the other position groups, are there any things that you've been watching as the mini camp has started or that you can tell much
yeah.
about?
I think our linebackers, the two main starters, Quan and Levante, look very very much in sync. They look like they're ready for training camp, which is good, and that's where you need to be. They, you know, those guys should know what they're doing, and they look smooth. You know what I'm saying? Coach is saying, you know, he kind of can count on those guys up the middle. Those two guys, and he mentioned Gerald McCoy, obviously, and Keith Tandy in the safety, in the secondary. And then the third linebacker spot is where it gets interesting. And so far, Kendall Beckwith hasn't been able to play, but apparently Devontae Bond's doing pretty well. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I wrote about him the other day. He actually did a lot of pass rushing when he was at Oklahoma. And they ran a 3-4 defense, and he was starting in 2015 for a good part of the year. And he was what they called a jack. You know, we have Mike, Will, and Sam. They have 3-4, and one of theirs was called a jack. But it's really a lot like what he's doing when we're in under fronts now, and he walks up and is basically standing at the edge of the line where the tight end is. And you can, from that point, you can rush the passer, and he had 3 sacks in his last year at Oklahoma, or you can, like, cover and curls in the flat and things like that. And so even though it's Sam in a 4-3 under front, he told me a lot of the responsibilities are very similar to the jack position that he played at Oklahoma.
That's interesting. And I mean, I think it will be a benefit to him that he didn't, as much as it is unfortunate, he didn't get to play last year. It's almost like a redshirt year. Mm-hmm. And his knowledge of the team, the playbook, the defense, mm-hmm. all of that, it seems like that would give him an edge as compared to some of those other
sure.
guys,
well,
at least at the beginning of the season.
It would give him an edge over a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's had a whole year. If he had been on the active roster, he probably would have been playing special teams, which he was good at Oklahoma, and he would have basically been an understudy to Daryl Smith. Is it possible he would have taken the starting job away from Daryl Smith? Of course it's possible, but, I mean, just guessing here, he probably would have been learning from Daryl Smith the entire season with the thought that he takes over now. So basically he got that. It was mental reps. He wasn't really running around, but he stayed involved in all the meetings and the practices. You saw him out there all the time on the sideline. So he still got to absorb all that knowledge. He says he feels pretty comfortable now.
I was thinking about how linebacker might be one of those positions that will benefit most from that changed rule about when the cutdowns happen because of how many of them end up playing on special teams
right.
as well and just have all those little bubble roles where mm-hmm. it's not necessarily just about their game film. It's a huge percentage
sure.
about special teams
yeah.
and to have another game.
And DBs, too.
Potentially, yeah, that some of those guys are going to really – and
mm-hmm.
those are some of the positions where the depth is very much a question of who's going to get those spots.
Yeah.
This may be a prime year for them to have had that rule change.
I think that's a good point. I think it applies even better to the DBs. I mean, I can remember some years where we were playing after the first round of guys – which weren't the starters because they were all not starting. After the first round, our guys played a little bit. We were playing like cornerbacks at safety and stuff like
right.
that because you just don't have the depth you need for that.
Yeah, that makes a good point.
We won't have that problem this year.
Right, which is going to be really helpful. We still have a couple more segments coming up. The last one will be getting to your Twitter questions, so you can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. That's how I'll be able to find it in that final segment. We'll take a quick break right here and be right back. Welcome back to Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We are still going to have another segment after this one, getting to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive. So we thought in this segment we'd talk a little bit about the biggest winners of the offseason, and the jury is still out for people for training camp, which jury's still out for pretty much everybody. I mean, that's what training camp is all about. But let's start with the biggest winners. Some guys, maybe, you know, a guy or two at each position, potentially, that has had a really good off season.
Well, I think first of all, the biggest winners are us, because the off season is over tomorrow.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
There's the off season definitely has its reasons for existence.
Right, but they're not great for our purposes.
But we're ready for training camp, and I know everybody's going to get 6 weeks off, and I'm sure that there's a lot of guys who are looking forward to doing some other stuff for a while. But there was a lot of guys talking yesterday about how Jameis, Clint McDonald, about how they'd be pretty much okay if we could just roll right into training camp. And they're kind of excited and ready to go. So football is just right around the corner.
Yeah, it does feel like it gets ramped up and then shut down.
Yeah.
And then ramped up again.
Like, it's that one dry period of the whole calendar year for the NFL, really. But it's really exciting this year, and the excitement's really going to build even more than usual because of Hard Knocks. So right from the beginning of training camp, I mean, the league's going to be – everybody is going to be looking at the Buccaneers, and they've got a lot to prove, but there's a lot of optimism. So
that's
from a bigger standpoint, we're all
bigger
winners.
Bigger standpoint,
right?
We're all winners.
Let's all get a trophy.
Yeah, say participation trophy.
I would say the biggest winner of the offseason, if we're talking about players, is Jameis Winston, because the drive to get him more weapons certainly worked out well.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yes.
If that was an actual campaign, you know, for political purposes, they would have absolutely won.
And I read plenty of national stuff, so it's not just us, you know,
biased
with rose-colored glasses
local people,
on.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that believe the array of offensive weapons that this team has could be among the league's best. It's certainly deep at every position. Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, O.J. Howard, Cam Braid, Adam Hayward, Chris Godwin. I mean, I would think Jameis Winston is licking his chops at the possibilities of this.
That's probably part of why he doesn't want to take that break before training camp. He's like, let's go.
Yeah.
Do you get worried about the overhype almost, that people are like, you never know how things are going to work out on paper, and the fact that all this national media and everybody's just all of a sudden going crazy about the Bucks? Do you worry about the way that mentally that could have an effect?
I'm not worried about the team. You do kind of get a little leery about being overhyped, but nowadays I think it's hard for the hype machine to completely go over the top, because there's so many voices that you're always going to have plenty of dissenting voices.
That's true.
And I've read plenty
anytime
of
you
articles.
Need a little ego drop, you can find somebody.
Well, I mean, then there's these things like Football Outsiders or Pro Football Focus and stuff like that that purport to be analytical, just like in baseball. And I can't think of the name of the one, but there's Roto, I can't think of what it's called, but there's one that always puts out predictions before the year starts on standings, and they're often pretty darn good. And a lot of it is based on statistical models and ideas like regression and so on. And you can apply the same things to football, but it's not quite as easy. But still, people try. And in a lot of those metrics, you'll see them, the computers, whatever they use, spitting out the Buccaneers finishing 7-9. So there's plenty of people that don't believe. So I don't think the hype is overwhelming. The attention is pretty strong compared to what this team is used to, and it's only going to get more when we hit training camp with Hard Knocks.
Yeah, that's true. A couple other players maybe on offense that you think of were winners this offseason?
Well, Cam Brate, maybe counterintuitively to some people. Usually if you're on a team and that team uses its first-round pick on a player at your position, you might be a little bit worried. But this team starts two tight ends. It's right there on the depth chart. And I think everybody, at least internally, agrees that drafting O.J. Howard is good for Cam Brate, good for the team as a whole. But the things we can do with our two tight end packages now, with our 12 package, is going to be pretty entertaining. And I think all those weapons just helps all those guys. We talk about Mike Evans getting fewer double teams, but Cam Brate's going to have more open runs as well. And then combine that with the fact that every time coach is asked about who's doing well this offseason, which is a question that the coaches don't really like to answer too directly. One, because as Mike Smith was telling me today, he's like, just don't forget that OTAs are OTAs.
Yeah.
This is underwear football. He says it's not even close to what we're going to be doing in training camp. Not even close. So, you know, they don't really like to list this guy's doing great, this guy's doing great, this guy's doing bad. But he always mentions Cam Brate. By
That's
the way, I thought was interesting that Coach Cutter pointed out yesterday, just an aside, is that they gave each player an offseason grade.
Hmm.
I find that interesting. I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah.
And it's not just what happened on the field. It's what was done in the classroom and so on. So, yeah. And he declined to tell us, as
shocking.
You expect
yeah.
he would. But I'm sure there were some players who, you know, got sparkling A pluses
right.
and some who got needs improvement.
Did they mention if it had anything to do with how in shape you come into?
I'm sure that's part of it.
Offseason.
Yeah,
yeah
it would have to be, but yeah.
That's interesting.
Doesn't seem to be a rampant problem for us, though. I can't think of a guy that we're worried about him in terms of being in shape.
No, we don't have any of those guys that have those weight-based
weight
incentives,
clauses, yeah.
which I think is kind of funny.
Even the big guys. I mean, you know, you kind of want Stevie Tuikolovato to be big.
Yes, that is true.
He's very wide, but he still moves.
Yeah, and that's what he's,
yeah.
that's what he's
and,
supposed
and
to
And the
be.
Offensive lineman, like Donovan Smith, is a very big guy.
Yes.
But he's still very
Which
nimble.
Is incredible. Yeah. I just am always amazed at how they can, I feel like
right.
I can't even fathom
yeah.
being that big and running as much as
and
I
And to
do.
Get back to your original question, I think Ali Marpet is a winner because I think this idea of moving him to center, you know, first we heard it couched as an experiment that they'll try, and we wanted to more, be more versatile. And as it as time goes on, it seems to be more and more like closing in, like this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't move a very good and promising guard who's had two good seasons at guard to center if they didn't think he could be even better at center and be an outstanding center. So he's in position maybe to see his career go to another level.
Yeah, that could be pretty incredible. How about anybody on the defensive side?
Coach mentioned Vernon Hargreaves is the guy that's making splash plays every day. And you heard the beginning of this storyline at the end of last year when they wanted him to be more aggressive. You know, and it's no surprise whatsoever that a guy adjusting to the league might tend to give a little bit more of a cushion because you don't want to get beat deep.
Right,
cornerbacks are supposed to have, you know, or be able to erase their memories and have short memories. And if they get, they're going to get beat deep from time
right.
to time. And get over it, but still, you don't want to give that play up.
Yeah, that's true.
But they think he's a playmaker, and they want him to play aggressively, and apparently that message is gotten through, and he's really playing aggressively and making splash plays on the practice field almost every day.
That's pretty cool. And are there any people that you think of as they have maybe the most to prove or gain from training camp?
Yeah, well, I would say some of the guys that haven't done anything yet.
Like
I mean,
the linemen that don't get a chance to hit.
Well, that too, of course, yeah. That's a very good point. But and when the pads go on, it's a totally different game for everybody in the front seven and then the offensive line. But I would say the guys that haven't practiced because they're getting over minor injuries or they're coming back from major injuries like a
right.
Jocky Smith. There's a lot of optimism about Jocky Smith, but at this point that's all it is, right?
Yeah,
and Noah
true.
Spence hasn't practiced much because of it coming off his shoulder surgery, but everybody's expecting big things out of him. Or take a Justin Evans, who was taken in the second round, and I don't think they took him in the second round without thinking that he might make an impact right away, but he hasn't really practiced yet.
Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, we still have one more segment coming up. We're going to get to your Twitter questions. Keep sending those in. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back after this quick break.
Downfield shot for Godwin, who makes a catch, and will scamper for a touchdown. Got it. Over to a heavy traffic, you guys. Stevie T clogged it up. Throws downfield. O.J. Howard is wide open, and once again, the tight end will victimize the Tigers with a huge play.
Welcome back into Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. Time for our final segment. This is where we get to your Twitter questions. You can keep sending them in throughout the segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive. Our first one comes from TL, and he says, where do some of the current Bucks rank among the all-time Tampa records? Things like passing, receiving, and tackles.
Like career? Most career?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess, or it could be any records of single season or whatever, but yeah, probably career most likely.
Well, the big one's Doug Martin. He's already fourth in team history in rushing, and he could get up to number – if he has the type of year people seem to be expecting, he'll easily get up to second this year behind James Wilder, passing Allstott and Dunn, because he's only like 800 or 900 away from passing those guys. If he had a monster season and had 1,500 and something, he could even catch James Wilder and be the all-time leading rusher in team's history, which is –
that would be pretty crazy.
It seems kind of hard to believe considering he's really had two great years and then three – obviously, they were injury-plagued and not as great, but that's kind of been the story of Buccaneer running backs through the years. And even James Wilder really had two gigantic seasons in 84 and 85 and just kind of otherwise had 600, 700, 800-yard seasons. And Warrick Dunn would have been easily the guy if he hadn't left for Atlanta. He would have blown away all the team's records, but he got so many of his yards in Atlanta. Mike Allstott wasn't always piling up 800 or 900 yards a season, but he was around for a long time. So it's not that surprising in the long run. Most Buccaneer running backs haven't lasted a really long time. We haven't had an Adrian Peterson that's there for your team for a decade. Mike Evans is already up to about seventh in receiving yards and could move up a couple spots this year, probably will, which is pretty quick after 3 years. Of course, when you're one of the six or seven people that ever had 1,000 yards in each of your first 3 years, it adds up quick.
Yeah, that's very true.
I don't know what else. Gerald McCoy's like fourth or fifth in sacks, but he's nowhere close to catching the next guy. I think that's about it.
It's about the closest ones?
Levante David's about seventh in tackles, but that's a little weird one because tackles used to be compiled in different ways, and so comparing them between eras.
Apples and oranges a little bit. Aaron has two questions for us. One is more serious than the other. I always like starting with the silly ones. He just says, how awesome is Allie's hair?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, you're not sold on it yet?
Well, whatever. How awesome do you think Allie's hair is?
Well, I like taking some credit because on the radio show when we dared him to not cut it or shave for the whole season, that was when this started.
Is he shaving, though?
And he's shaving, but he still hasn't cut his hair since the beginning of the radio show last September.
Really?
Yeah. He's gone because it was like buzzed from before that. So like since
does he like it?
I think so. I think he likes that he doesn't have to pay for haircuts. He's a rather frugal individual.
Well, it's
and
definitely
that's what's that's why he's continued it. It wasn't some big fashion choice.
I think
he just was like, I don't really.
It makes for a lot better video on the field, though, like when he takes his helmet off.
Yeah, the slow, the Fabio
sweaty hair all over the place.
Aaron's other question is, what's going on with Wilcox? Haven't seen too much of him through OTAs and minicamp.
Yeah, he wasn't practicing for a while because of a minor injury. He returned, I believe, last week, and he's practicing right now in OTAs. So this is not unsurprising. They knew this was coming. So he's fine.
Okay.
He'll be fine for training camp, as just about everybody will be.
Sean wants to know, if we think we have good corner depth, where is potentially a position that we are a little concerned about depth, or is there not one? Do we have?
No, I would say we can find some spots. Linebacker, maybe. I mean, you got your two guys, your two obviously stalwart starters, but you have a third starting spot that's going to be filled by somebody who has little to no starting experience in the NFL, just by default. I mean, that's all the candidates are. I mean, we already talked about Bond and Beckwith, and maybe you can throw a Darius Glanton or Cam Lynch or the guy from Canada, Jeff Knox, in the mix. Who knows? But none of those guys have any real NFL starting experience. And then all that depth is guys like that. So, I don't think that's a dire problem because I think there's some talent there. And oftentimes your 4 through 6 or however many linebackers you keep are guys like that. They're special teamers who don't have a lot of starting experience. But that would be the spot because
– yeah. Makes sense.
Tight ends now deep.
Yeah.
Wide receivers a lot deeper than it used to be, although probably not as deep in proven. It's a little harder to say who your 6 wide receivers are than some people might realize.
That's interesting. Yeah, just not
so maybe the back end of the receiver core, even despite the additions.
Interesting. Champ says, I know it's early, but minicamp-wise, who would you say is the leading safety to start right now?
The problem is he's right. It's early because Keith Tandy and Chris Conte have been taking almost all the reps because Justin Evans and J.J. Wilcox have hardly practiced, and Evans is still not practicing. So I was asking Coach Smith today, earlier today, about Keith Tandy, and of course he was saying good things about him, but I think he was maybe leery of me interpreting that as, you know, too
locked
strong
in or anything,
because
yeah.
He said, now I want to make sure, and I talked about this before, that was when he said that whole thing about this isn't anything like what training camps can be like. So really the competition for safety hasn't even begun. So it wouldn't even make sense for us to try to point out who's ahead right now.
Right. Okay. And then this is our final question, and I think this is a very entertaining one. if you could pick Bucks players for a 5-on-5 basketball game, who would you guys pick? And it says Team Casey versus Team Scott.
So. Oh, boy, we have to draft then?
Yeah, but see, that's the problem.
Okay.
I think just pick five and we'll see where we overlap. Maybe we can pick some extras.
We got to go with DeMar Dotson.
As your center?
Because he was a basketball player in college, and he's 6'9".
Huge, yeah.
My problem is I don't know. Oh, Mike Evans.
Yep, he played as well.
He's obviously
I think he'd be like maybe your small forward. Would we go with that?
Yeah, I would think that, especially in this lineup.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to be smaller than an average NBA lineup, I think, amazingly to say.
Right.
Since he's 6'5 and Dotson's 6'9.
Right.
I don't know. You're going to have to help me here. What are the guys?
I would say point guard might be like a Brent Grimes. Like, he seems like real quick.
Well, he can jump through the roof.
Right. So that seems like that'd be kind of an interesting.
I bet.
Apparently, he has a pretty sweet jump shot on the little tiny hoop that they have in the locker room, which is kind of funny. Not exactly representative of real basketball, but it's the best evidence we have of here.
Well, and he can jump.
Yeah.
So he's probably, if you have to have somebody represent you in the dunk contest.
Yeah. So we need a shooting guard and a power forward. Power forward, I feel like Gerald or Clinton would be pretty awesome.
I don't know.
The enforcer, Draymond Green type.
Can they play basketball, though? We're trying to...
Yeah, you know. Well, the only ones I know are Mike Evans and DeMar Dotson. Everybody else, I'm not really sure. I know Cam Brate shot like 20% from the free throw line when he played in high school, so I am not picking
But he played
him,
in
but
high
he played,
school.
But he literally shot
so
free throws with his eyes closed.
If
so
you
that's
put him
like...
If you put him at power forward, they'd be hacking him constantly.
Yes,
to
you'd
get
have...
Him at the line.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, beggars can't be choosers here.
That's true. Very good point.
I guess this shows a deficiency in my knowledge of the team because I can't think of other guys who have basketball. There's got to be another handful of guys who have basketball.
This is going to be a thing we investigate.
We're going to have to find out.
I did a Casey's Corner on this last year, but some of the guys that were picked are now gone.
With us.
So we'll have to do another one, see a new revised lineup.
You just got to think who your best bet at. Best. Maybe Vernon Hargreaves plays basketball.
Maybe he did.
He could be your other guard.
That would be a pretty good option. Send us your thoughts. We want to hear everybody else's thoughts. Who would you draft for a Bucks complete
But I think
basketball
Mike
team?
Evans would probably be the first.
Oh, he's a lock, for sure.
It's probably been a long time since DeMar's played.
That's true, but he's just so tall that counts. Just hold up your hand and throw the ball up there.
We'll get the rebounds.
Well, thanks for being with us on this edition of Buccaneers Insider Live, presented by Miller Lite. Enjoy the rest of minicamp and the start of the true offseason with nothing going
Six
on
weeks.
After Thursday. And keep coming back here for the show every week. We'll see you next time.